name's Sadia. I'll be chairing this session on the revolutions in Eastern Europe and the fall of the Berlin Wall. We're very lucky to have Klaus Henning speaking to us today. Klaus Henning is a member of Die Linke and the revolutionary group within that, Marx 21. He's the author of a number of books on Eastern Europe as well. He is also a lecturer at the Potsdam University, so quite an expert on the topic. Klaus is going to speak for roughly 30 minutes, and then we'll have plenty of time for questions, for discussion. So if you think of something to say, note it down. We'll definitely get to your comments as well. So without further ado, I might hand it over to Klaus.
Yeah. Thank you, Sadia. Let me start with a big thank you that your Socialist Alternative invited me, and I have the opportunity to speak here about the subject falling of the wall. And introducing myself, I was born in Eastern Berlin, and I lived there during the revolution, but I was 11 years old, so events, I was on demonstrations, but not by consciousness, I can talk about, because we have written a lot of books, and we edited now a book of our comrades about the history of the GDR in German. You can find it on the book table in the place where the books are. So what I want to do is to tell about the history of the German East German Revolution from the early stages until the reunification. But before I start, I want to tell you a little things about the nature of Stalinism in Eastern Germany, because it is important to understand the following events. The comrade yesterday from the United States, when he talked about the wall of Trump against Mexico, he said that the wall is a wall for workers. And this is very important to understand at the first, that the wall in Berlin was also a wall against the workers, because the middle classes and the upper classes in GDR, they had less problems to travel in the West. So the wall was built in 1961, especially with a goal to prevent East German workers to leave the country, to go to the West, because in the West the living standards and the wages were higher. So the nature of Stalinism, the Eastern European regimes and also the GDR, they claim to be socialist. Yes, they in the constitution of GDR there was written it is a workers and peasant state. So it is very important to understand that far from this ideology, it's not true. The according to Marx, socialism can only be achieved through a revolution. And in GDR, there was never a revolution. Socialism was introduced in 1949 without a revolution. On the contrary, after the Second World War, there was a movement of workers. They created council-like structures, the so-called anti-fascist committees, because after the collapse of the Nazi regime, they took the factories in their hands. But the first step of the Stalinist group around a small group around Walter Ulbricht, he became later the first head of the state and the party. The first thing they did was to crush this self-organization of workers in the GDR. And then they took over the Communist Party by cleansing in Stalinist style, and the third step was to take over the biggest labor party in Germany, and Germany is the SPD, the Social Democratic Party. So they crushed every self-organizing of workers, every kind of workers' organization they were crushed, and this was the beginning of the so-called socialism in the GDR. So the power of this new ruling class, the Stalinist regime, was based on two pillars. The first pillar, they built up again the state. They rebuilt the state with police, with an army, and with a huge secret police. You have to know in the GDR, in the East Germany, the so-called German Democratic Republic, there was the biggest secret police in all over Eastern Europe. At the end of GDR, there were 200,000 employees for the secret police to 16 million citizens of GDR. It means one secret police officer to 80 citizens. In Russia, for example, you have 1 to 300, and in Czech Republic, it was 1 to 1,000. So it was a huge kind of oppression. And but this was even not the most important pillar. The most important pillar was the support of the Soviet army. It became very, very clear in 1953 when there was a huge workers' uprising in Eastern Germany. And this was a really, really workers' uprising. In the core was a general strike, and it was a purely workers' uprising because the middle classes, they didn't participate in this movement. And the movement was so strong that even the police and the East German army and the secret police couldn't stop this movement, and only the Russian tanks were able to crush this movement by force. And after these events, a lot of the workers they leave the country. They went to the West because in the West living standard was higher and the oppression was lower, and this forced the Stalinist government then to build the wall in 1961. But there was not only oppression in Stalinism. It's very important to understand that there was also exploitation, that the Stalinist societies were class societies. You had a ruling class. They controlled the economy. They called the system people's property. The factories, per law, they were people's property. But this term, people's property, is a false term because the people, they didn't control the state. The economy was nationalized. But as long as you don't have a control over the state, you don't have a control over the economy. So these small groups, the small ruling class, controlled the economy. And then on the other side, we had the workers, which had nothing to say. It became very clear when in 1989, from East German sociologists, there was a survey, and they asked if the workers feel represented. On the factory level and in the society, and 80% of the workers said, no, we don't feel represented on these levels. So it is important to understand because at the end, during the revolution, when the workers' movement became stronger, it was a workers' movement that demanded the crush of the state, the crush of the GDR, and the reunification with the West. It was not the middle class that also took part in the East German Revolution. And of course, it was not the ruling class, but it was the workers' class. This is very important to understand because the workers, they don't had any interest in preserving what was called people's property because it was not their property, it was not their state, it was a state against them. Okay, saying so much, I want to start with a film about the event. And after that, I go...
deshalb haben wir uns dazu entschlossen, heute eine Regelung zu treffen, die es jedem Bürger der DDR möglich macht, über Grenzübergangspunkte der DDR auszureisen. Das zählt nach meiner
Okay. So now you everything know? No. Okay. The early stages. The beginning of the revolution was marked by two movements, as you have seen. You had on the one hand there was a civil rights movement. This was started after 1986, let's say. It was organized in churches and especially in churches, because it was the only place where activists could meet, and in private apartments. For example, there were examples where
hundreds of people every day meet each other in private apartments. This civil rights movement was an answer on the situation that in the Soviet Union, Mikhail Gorbachev, in the middle of the 80s, came to power and started a program of reform called Perestroika and Glasnost. Perestroika meant the introduction of market economy, and Glasnost meant a kind of democratization, because it was very clear that these market economy methods will have negative effects on the workers. So he decided to give as a gift the democracy as well. But nevertheless, this produced in other countries in Eastern Europe big hopes of democratic change, and as well as in Eastern Germany. This civil rights movement had a social base in the middle class. A lot of people who participated in this movement had a university degree, were doctors, pastors, and artists, and so on. And on the other side, in May 1989, the Hungarian government opened the border to Austria, and this took a lot of workers took the opportunity to have holidays in the summer in Hungary, because it was cheap and it was possible without visa to go from GDR to Hungary, and they just wanted to wait for a good moment to cross the border. You have seen it. And this movement, this refugee movement, let's say, this had a proletarian character. These two movements, they came together in September. In September, there were the occupations of the embassies in Prague and in Budapest. And because of the pressure, the government in Eastern Germany had to accept that these refugees in the embassies could leave the embassies to the west. The trains went through the territory of Eastern Germany, and in that time, a lot of workers on the train road, they came to the train road, they demonstrated in solidarity with the people and tried to get on the trains to go in the west. So this movement then started to organize and to merge with the civil rights movement, and the product were the Monday demonstrations. The Monday demonstrations this civil rights movement was organized in churches, and the churches, they had every Monday a peace prayer. They call it peace prayer, pray for peace. But after the praying, there was a demonstration, and these demonstrations attracted the workers. So this movement grew very rapidly, and even at the beginning of September, there were several thousand. At the beginning of October, there were in Leipzig 20,000 on the street. And a few days later, in Plauen, which is a city with only 200,000 inhabitants, there were 20,000 on the street. Every tenth of citizens were on the street. So this movement very, very quickly grew up on the street. And the turning point was then the 9th of October in Leipzig. Because it was not clear how the regime will react. In the past weeks, the regime remarkably often congratulated the Chinese government. The Chinese government crushed an uprising in the summer in Beijing, and the head of the state already went to China to congratulate the Chinese government, and he invited the Chinese government to come to the GDR, and the government as well announced that it will crush the demonstration on 9th of October. They brought the army to Leipzig. They mobilized the army, the police, and even militias, combat groups. Yeah. So the leader of the militias announced that they will crush the demonstration even if needed with weapons in the hand. So it was not clear what will be happen, but at the end of the day, the demonstration took place. 70,000 people demonstrated in Leipzig, and the regime did not crush the demonstration. And this was a very, very important turning point. And then the movement even rose very faster. The next week, there were 200,000 people on the street. The question is why the regime did not choose the Chinese solution and crushed the movement. And I think there are two reasons. The first reason is the Gorbachev doctrine. Gorbachev said that the Soviet Union will not help anymore the governments in the Eastern Bloc. So it was clear that the help of Russian tanks, like in 1953 or in 1956 in Hungary, will not come. And on the other side, there are records of the Ministry of the Interior that the ruling class, they really feared the general strike, because the movement already began to mobilize the workers in the factories, and they had they had a trauma with the uprising in 1953, because they really fear that this could happen again. Okay, and this was the reason why the government then in October made a retreat, a tactical retreat, and tried to influence the movement in order to collaborate with the more moderate parts of the movement that were the civil rights groups, like New Forum. This was the biggest civil rights group. The Erich Honecker, the long-time leader of party and state, stepped back. Another Stalinist leader came to power. But this couldn't stop the movement. The movement became bigger and bigger and bigger. But at the end of October, it became clear that the movement was consisting of different forces or different interests. It became more and more clear that the leadership of the civil rights opposition groups, they want to have a compromise with the government. They don't want to crush the state. They said they want reforms. They want a reform kind of socialism, and they want to preserve the GDR. But on the other side, there were workers on the streets. They demanded the crush of the Stasi, the secret police, and the crush of the state. This became very clear at the beginning of November, when in Berlin a demonstration took place, where the leadership of the civil rights groups, New Forum, invited the regime to speak on the demonstration and get an audience. And on the other side, in Leipzig, on the Monday demonstration, the regime was rejected. So there were these differences, and these differences became even clearer at the beginning of November. In regard of the demand of falling of the wall. As you have seen in the film, on 9th of November, there was the occupation of the walls. This was a movement by the workers.
it caused in this mistake this Stalinist bureaucrat made on the press conference, because they were, because of the pressure, they were forced to make some reforms in the border regime, but it was never their goal and never their aim to crush the borders at all. They wanted to have a coordinated border regime where you have to call for a visa, and then if you have a visa, you can go out but never come back. This was the idea, to get some steam from the from the pressure. And when the workers saw this press conference in the television, they suddenly came to the borders and occupied the borders. You have seen it in the pictures. By the way, I was living next to this point at the Bornheimer Street in Berlin. So, and at the end, it was the workers who shut down the borders. And the next day, the leader of the New Forum, the leader of the biggest group of civil rights movement, the leader said that this was a mistake to make this announcement and to open the borders in this, in such not coordinated way. And there was a leaflet by the New Forum that said that criticized all this opening of the borders, because the people they were not asked when the wall was constructed, and they were not asked when the wall came down. But it is not true. It was the workers itself who occupied the borders and to crush down the borders. So when the wall fall, the next days the workers, they make the experience of the prosperity gap between East and West. You must know that in Eastern Germany, even the basic needs, it was not safe that you will have it. And we are not talking about luxury goods like coffee or bananas. We talk about toilet paper. We had the situation that the most of the workers lived under very low wages. The pensions were very low for the most of the population, for the workers. And but the situation for the middle classes were better. Yes, there were special shops where you can buy coffee and other better products, but you had to pay the tenth of the price. Yeah, so the middle class they had less problems with needs supply. And the situation for them was better. They had higher pensions. There was a special pensions for the middle class, and so on. The leader of the citizen movement said that, what is it? It's a bad picture. You go there in the West and you go shopping. They criticized the workers for going to the West to go shopping to buy the things they wanted to buy, chocolates and coffee. And the attitude then of the civil rights movement was to promote a kind of consumerism, to say, we have socialism here, we are poor, yeah, but it's good, we are poor, because we have a more equal society. But the workers, they knew that this was not an equal society, and if the leaders of the New Forum talked about poverty, they didn't mean the own property, they mean the property of the workers. So, and this was a reason why there was a radicalization and a alienation of the events in southern Eastern Germany, where there was the big industry areas, and the developments in the north, in Berlin, for example. And this became then very, very clear in December, because in December, at the beginning of December, the working class became more and more self-consciousness and took to the street. And the basic demand, the dissolution of the security police was not solved. And the basic demand of the retreat of the SED rule, of the retreat of the ruling party, was not succeeded. So they started to occupy the headquarters of the secret police. And this is very important. This movement is very important to understand for the next events. So there were mass occupations of the local headquarters of the secret police in southern Eastern Germany. And in many cases, there were a crush with the police. The police tried to crush down the protest with tear gas. And even this violence couldn't stop the workers to occupy the secret police headquarters. And there were cases where police officers shot them down because they were such they had such a fear of the rage. There was a big of rage, and this turned to the factories and to the companies where the workers started to strike. And at the beginning of December, there was a call of a general strike. Workers had occupied local organizations of the new forum of the civil rights groups. They went into the groups, and the local branches of new forum in the south then announced a general strike for 6th of December. The leadership of the new forum in Berlin said, "This is adventurous." This is the wrong way to make a general strike, and they were supported by the mass media. They said this will harm the economy. All politicians, even the opposition politicians, even the social democrat politicians, said this will harm the economy, and the economy is bad, and this is not good for us all. The general strike, but nevertheless, strikes take place. Not in the form of a general strike everywhere in the country, but in certain cities in the south, because the opposition leaders, they said they don't want to have a general strike. But nevertheless, there was a beginning of strike waves in the factories, and this forced the government to make even a bigger retreat, and they formed a cooperation with the civil rights groups, and they formed a cooperation in form of a round table. This was the time of round table. The opposition leaders said that the round table is a tool to control the government, but in fact, this round table did nothing. They talked and talked and talked, and there was no dissolution of the Stasi. And the opposition leader tried to say, let's wait, let's wait, let's wait, and let's make only silent demonstrations, because Christmas is coming and we should calm down. And in fact, the real goal or the aim was, it was a fear of a radicalized movement that on that time already demanded the crushing of the state and the crushing and the reunification with Western Germany. So they didn't want this. They wanted to preserve the GDR, and that was the reason why they said, calm down, calm down. And there was their hope that Christmas Day will bring a calming down of the protests. But the ruling class, they mentioned this situation, this crucial situation, and they started a counteroffensive at the beginning of January. They called for counter-protests against the opposition on the street under the name of anti-fascist
demonstrations. You have to know that the term anti-fascism was used by the Stalinist regime always against the workers. Even the wall was called an anti-fascist wall. Yeah. So, and everything, every, let's say, self-activity of workers were announced as fascist. And this was a case, and I think it's reason why we had after that a lot of problems with Nazis in Eastern Germany, because of the discreditation of anti-fascism by the Stalinist regime. I will not talk about the racism of Stalinist regime. They and how they cooperate with the real Nazis. I don't talk about, but we can talk about in the discussion. So this was really only a tool, and the workers and the radical movement they saw that this is a maneuver and started a counter maneuver in the mid of January. In the mid of January, there was a big occupation of the central headquarters of the secret police in Berlin. So, and this was really the end, and this was a turning point. It was once again a spontaneous movement. The new forum did nothing in the forefront of the events to against the Stasi in Berlin. In southern region of Eastern Germany, the Stasi was already destroyed, but in Berlin, the national headquarters was still working. Yeah. So, and there was a mobilization. There was a big pressure. At the end, the new forum had to accept the support for this demonstration, but the majority were spontaneously the workers from Berlin, and there were big mobilizations from the south of Eastern Germany. And then, during the occupation, the leaders of the civil rights movement, for the new forum, they tried to calm down the people against violence, to protect the building, because we can use the building for good things and so on. But at the end, the movement occupied and destroyed the headquarters. All the files there were crushed away and so on. And once again, after this event, there was a general strike in the air. Once again, on several cities in East Germany, wild strikes began. Bus drivers, yes, ordinary workers began to strike. And this, at the end, crushed the head of the regime. And they formed a formal government with the opposition group, with Neues Forum, and they decided to choose the reunification, because for them at that time it was better to have a reunification than to have a general strike, mm-hmm. let's say, and to crush by the workers' movement. So, what I want to say at the end is that it is very important to understand that the events were forced by the workers' movement, and it was the weakness of the left. We didn't have a big left. We had a left, we had a small revolutionary left, but they had somehow the position that the GDR is a better state than the West German state. So they didn't take on the demands of the working movement. So the workers' movement had no left that could direct this movement in the right direction. At the end, the only party who supported
the reunification was the West German Conservative Party. Even the West German Social Democracy didn't support the reunification, the fast reunification, because they said it's too expensive. We have to pay too much money. So at the end, the Conservative Party made big arms and took this movement. But I think the history of the movement shows that there were a lot of possibilities. There was a possibility of a general strike. If we had a general strike, the history would have been another one, in another direction maybe, a better reunification contract in favor for the workers. But nevertheless, the problem was that a direct transition from the Stalinist regime to socialism from below was not possible at that point of time, because the differences in the prosperity and the living standard were so big that for the workers, at the first step, it was very clear that the first step must be the reunification. Yes? And we had 40 years of big oppression in the name of socialism, and the socialism, the term socialism was discredited, and I think we have now a better situation. That's for the fightings ahead.